We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
The Mobile Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta. Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com and the radio.com app. Coming down here in Midtown, but looks like the sun might peek through the clouds over the northeast sky that I look across. I tell you one thing, and it's not just producer Marshall Parker, but Ken Roundtree and all those guys. I feel for those guys who are there in the studio without us there. You know, I've been places where I've had to host remotely like that, and while it's fun for us hosts to be able to, you know, walk into, you know, your office or just off your bed and pop on a mic and do a show, it's kind of a lonely feeling for a producer. So I certainly feel for our guys who are having to do things remotely as we continue to try and negotiate ourselves through the COVID-19. It's all just basically out of the advent of safety. We have the ability and the capability. Look, when I first did radio, the technology was not even close to what it is right now. And I was doing a lecture where I basically talked about the fact that I did a high school football playoff game off the back of a flatbed trailer with no press box and on basically a cell jack, where you took the old Nokia box phone that you used to get from the 7-Eleven and connect that to a thing called a cell jack, and it sounds like an analog phone, not a digital phone like you would have here, like when you call somebody on your iPhone or your Android, and it sounds almost as clear as you standing next to somebody. No, this was the old, like, it sounded like a landline phone, and it was on a station that broadcast over 23 counties in southeast Missouri. And we've gone from that to be basically getting a proprietary app here on my phone, connecting back to the studio, and it sounds like I'm sitting right next to Marshall and broadcasting out to you. So kudos to our technical staff and our engineering for making sure that not only we have the ability to bring you the broadcast we do here on 92.9 The Game, but also making sure that each of our people is as safe as possible when it comes to keeping away from COVID-19. 404-741-0929 is the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. On Twitter, at Willie P Style, that's IEP Style. I did want to at least answer one question that was given to me during our discussion about the Braves. A guy says, you're dead wrong about getting rid of Ronald Acuna. Going to be a multiple MVP winner one day. I did not say get rid of Ronald Acuna Jr. Please, please do not misunderstand me. You hang on to Ronald Acuna Jr. like tight. That's not who I was saying. I'm saying you got to pick one between Pache and Waters and decide, okay, this is going to be your other outfielder alongside Acuna for the future. Especially given the fact that, oh, by the way, Adam Duvall isn't a free agent until after 2022. So you have him for at least two more years. And he's hitting the cover off the ball. Now, granted, he's a streaky hitter. Think about the way people were talking about Nick Markakis the couple of weeks leading up to September and how off the table he's fallen. So, again, I know that hitting is a fickle thing, but you got to pick one between Pache and Waters and unload the other. And whether you want the ability of Pache to field and think that his bat is an upside, or if you think Drew Waters is the next Dansby Swanson, Chipper Jones, and not the next Jeff Francoeur, no offense to Frenchie, but that could be that could be the floor, or even, you know, maybe not even the floor, that could be the ceiling, depending on his strikeout numbers and if they are as bad as we've seen them be throughout his time in the minors. But between one of those two, pick one, unload the other, help your pitching staff, and solidify your team's future. We'll talk, like I said, to Ross Dellinger this hour. He was supposed to join us at 12:40, got a call from a source on a story, and it looks like the source on the story actually involves something in our state. We'll delve into that, involving the folks at Georgia Southern, who will not dress 33 players today in their matchup coming up later on today. So we'll get into some of that with Ross, and also where we sit with some of these games that are in the COVID limbo and just where exactly we sit for the first real full week of college football. That's today, with ACC and Big 12 play, SEC and some of the others getting ready to take place coming up in a couple of weeks' time as well. Jason Longshore is going to join us as well to talk some Atlanta United soccer, Atlanta United in Nashville, right here on 92.9 The Game, kickoff just after 8:30. But before we do all of that, let's talk some NFL with a ground and pound. NFL ground and pound this week. Full slate of games beginning Sunday, including our Atlanta Falcons taking on the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle, a 2.5-point favorite. You'll hear it right here on 92.9 The Game. Our pregame coverage gets underway way early. Sam Crenshaw, Greg Clarkson, happy from 6 until 9. I'll be on with Hugh Douglas for the Wade Ford tailgate show. And then Chris Goforth, Harry Douglas have the Falcons pregame, postgame, and halftime stuff, leading you up to Wes and Dave in the booth at 1 o'clock tomorrow at the Benz. Meanwhile, the two teams that many believe are the tops of our division, Tampa Bay and New Orleans, take the field against each other. Can they both lose? Like, seriously, can they both lose? Like, I can't stand either of them, as we know. New Orleans for obvious reasons, and Tampa because I've basically been conditioned ever since the guy got into the league to hate Tom Brady. Tom Brady might be without one of his biggest weapons, though, come Sunday, as Mike Evans, wide receiver, has been tagged as doubtful for Sunday as a result of a hamstring injury that kept him out of practice both Wednesday and Thursday, looking unlikely that he will play. Speaking of the Falcons injury report, I did want to at least get you that while we have it. No Charles Harris for the Falcons. Also, no Kendall Sheffield for the Falcons on Sunday. Marlon Davidson questionable at defensive tackle, though he has been limited in practice over the course of Wednesday and Friday. Did not practice Thursday. Don't know what he'll be able to give you, even if he is able to dress for the Falcons on Sunday, which is unfortunate for the rookie out of Auburn. I'll tell you, on Thursday night, it looked a hell of a lot better than I thought it was going to. And I don't know if that's a figment of the Chiefs just being that much better than the Texans, or just being a better football team than the balance of the rest of the teams in the NFL overall. But it looked a heck of a lot better. It did not look like the 2011 football we saw, when you didn't have teams basically inside their facilities until late July, early August, and you had a preseason where nobody really seemed inclined to do anything in that year after the strike. Now, we didn't have any preseason, and limited hitting, and limited everything, and yet it looked somewhat aesthetically pleasing when it came to the gameplay for Chiefs-Texans. And that gives me hope that a team like the Falcons is going to be okay come Sunday against Seattle. Unfortunate news for a former Georgia Bulldog. Titans first-round pick Isaiah Wilson arrested Friday night on suspicion of DUI, according to the Davidson County Sheriff's Office. Titans saying in a statement, "We're aware of the situation. This is not conduct indicative of the character of our football team, and we are working through details on how to proceed." He was arrested at 11:29 on Friday, released on $1,000 bond, has a court appearance in early October, was traveling at a high rate of speed, and also, according to the arrest report, doing donuts at the intersection of 25th Avenue and Charlotte Avenue in Nashville, lost control of the vehicle and struck a concrete wall. Just an unfortunate situation for a former Georgia Bulldog who got an opportunity. And we talk about this all the time. You know, you got the opportunity. It's now up to you to walk through that door. And unfortunately, Isaiah Wilson has not walked through the door in a way that is becoming of a National Football League player. Two new contracts for running backs in the NFL. According to Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport, both reporting, the Vikings running back Dalvin Cook agreed to a 5-year, $63 million extension with the Minnesota Vikings. He'll be there for the next six seasons. And the same can be said for Alvin Kamara of New Orleans. He has reached an agreement on a 5-year extension worth $75 million in new money. So again, like I said earlier, despite the fact that you have cautionary tales like Devontae Freeman, Todd Gurley, and others in the NFL, teams are still giving big money to running backs. Now, I'm not saying that it's recklessly spent money, but at what point are teams going to stop biting the bullet on these guys? And the same can be said, too, for quarterbacks. Look, all these quarterbacks getting this life-changing money is great and all. Mahomes and some of the others, too. But there is something to be said, and I did a bit on this over the summer. There is something to be said for the percentage of your salary cap being dictated by one player. If you're in a situation where you have your salary cap, 20% of it dictated to one player, I don't care how important the quarterback is in the National Football League. It's hard to build a team around that because of the restrictions and everybody else wanting to be paid alongside it. I have no idea. I have no idea how the Chiefs did it. Whoever is running the cap for the Chiefs in Kansas City is not getting paid enough. I'm telling you that right now. Those people are doing wizardry type things with the NFL salary cap, which is the line on that is hard and fast. There are loopholes, and again, not worth getting into on the radio, but to be able to negotiate, massage the cap in a way that they have and still pay everybody and have a championship football team, what they're doing is nuts. There are concerns about air quality in the state of California. As you may or may not know, wildfires going on there. They were started in a rather, I don't want to say humorous, but in an unconventional way as a result of a gender reveal party gone wrong, but it has caused some real serious wildfires in the state of California, and it has messed with the air quality in the Bay Area, where San Francisco is getting set to take on the Arizona Cardinals tomorrow. Now, the AQI yesterday for practice for the Niners in Santa Clara was basically at the unhealthy air quality for adults level. And that's not good. And they still practiced yesterday fully, even though it was a walkthrough practice. They were outdoors yesterday. And so people inside the NFL are concerned that the air quality might affect the teams that are going to take the field on Sunday. Remember, also, the Rams have a game against the Dallas Cowboys coming up as well this week. But SoFi Stadium has a dome. Don't know if the air quality will be as contingent on that game as the one in Santa Clara, but certainly big concerns. Speaking of quarterback contracts, Dak Prescott will take the field in that game against the Rams. According to Jerry Jones' son, Stephen Jones, Dak Prescott bet on himself and bet wisely. He'll make $31.4 million this year, and absent a long-term deal, he'll either become a free agent in 2021 or make $37 million in the franchise tag or transition tag. Look, I'm not saying that Dak Prescott's deserving of that money, but anytime you bet on yourself like that, for every Kirk Cousins, there's a Matt Flynn. So I'm not saying that he's not worth the juice and not worth the sauce, and teams eventually will have to take their medicine and either put up or shut up when it comes to a quarterback. I wonder if there's still enough talent around Dak. There's plenty on that defense. But I'm wondering if there's enough talent around Dak outside of Zeke Elliott to make things work for the Cowboys this upcoming season. That's our NFL Ground and Pound, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P. in the building, 404-741-0929. Where we sit in the world of college football as teams get ready to kick it off this week, next week, and beyond, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated senior writer, joins us next to discuss all that and more. As we continue on a Saturday, Willie P. in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. Oh, I love that music. I love it so much. There was a rumor that they were thinking about getting rid of it or redoing it. I hope to God that's not it. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. College football fully underway for some, but not all. We'll try to decipher the have and have not right now with Ross Dellinger, who joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, as he joins us on this college football Saturday. What's happening, pal?
Exciting time to wake up on a Saturday morning, have game day on, and watch, you know, games. Not as many games as normal, which is nice, actually. You don't have 15, 20 games in a time window. Instead, you have, you know, 3 to 5 games today in a time window, and you can keep up with all of them. It's actually great.
So one of your latest tweets has to deal with the school in our state, Georgia Southern, without 33 of its players today, combination of suspensions, injuries, contract tracing, and positive tests, according to a source who spoke to you recently. Is this just something we have to deal with and live with, or is this a symptom of a larger problem?
Well, maybe a little of both. And kudos to Georgia Southern for putting out about an hour ago that they released every name of basically players that are inactive, and that's nice to see. We don't have enough, obviously, transparency right now in college football, especially on the upper levels of it. And it's just nice to have some transparency there. But this is something we're going to have to deal with all year, and I think everybody knew it was coming, is that not only this year do you have injuries to deal with, not only do you have suspensions to deal with, but you're going to have COVID issues like contact tracing that leads to players going into quarantine for a mandatory 14 days and positive tests that lead to players going into isolation for at least 10 days. So we're going to have to deal with it. It's going to be a long-term problem that's going to stretch through the season. And I wrote about it back in July, but it's going to be one of the biggest hurdles of the college football season is that mandatory 14-day quarantine for the contact tracing. Even though a player might not have it, you've got a situation where you've got to quarantine him for 14 days. I will say 33 players is a lot. And when you get, I don't know what the threshold is. You know, the Big 12 has set a threshold, I think, of you have to have 53 available players. The SEC is going to fall in line around somewhere like that. I would guess news on that is going to come out over the next week. We wrote a little bit about it last week. So I think the threshold is somewhere going to be around that 55 mark. But you really put the stress on your backups, you know, and young players a lot of times. And it'll be interesting to see how Georgia Southern handles this today.
Talking with Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated college football writer. And, you know, we saw it even at the Power 5 level with Virginia Tech having to postpone its Commonwealth Cup game against Virginia because of COVID-19 issues. They're going to pause their practice for 4 days. I know another writer basically likened this to a game of Jenga. You just kind of have to put the pieces wherever they fit right now in terms of the college football season. How confident are you that there's enough flexibility to get this all done in a way that resembles any kind of consistency or normalcy?
It's going to be tough. I've been thinking for the last month that we would start the season. It's just that's not the biggest obstacle. The biggest obstacle is finishing and completing a season with all the teams that started the season. That's going to be the real obstacle here, because you're going to have teams that have mass outbreaks that potentially not just miss a game or two, but might end up just shutting it down, you know, if you have enough. So that's, we could see that happening. It's going to be a tough year. And as Bob Bolton has said, I think multiple times and some other ADs and administrators, this is a year where you're just trying to get through the season. I mean, you want to win and all that, but you're just trying to get through the season and make it through the season.
Of course, a lot of people will ask about the two conferences that aren't playing right now. I know there's been some rumblings, Ross, about what's going on with the Big Ten and Ohio State trying to lead the charge. Where do we sit right now in terms of their start time and possibility of it happening sooner than the winter and the late fall?
Well, I'll be honest. I'm just about tired of this storyline, right? So the Big Ten is, it's like a soap opera. It's everyday drama. It kind of overshadows all of the things going on, including actual games. It's big news, obviously. I mean, it's significant news. And right now it sounds like from ESPN's reporting, from Pat Forty, from SI, from his reporting, my coworker and some others, that the Big Ten medical community has given a presentation today to a subcommittee of presidents, basically 2/3, it sounds like, of the presidents. And then they're going to either approve that new medical plan or medical information, or they're going to turn it down. If they approve it, then a bigger committee of presidents will meet and then they'll make the determination of when to start. And it seems like a start date is anywhere from late October through January. You know, if you don't start by probably late October, you're probably not going to be in the college football playoffs. So I'm sure that's driving a lot of this, and it'll be interesting to follow over the next few days.
I tried to give Kevin Warren benefit of the doubt because I know what his job is. He's a mouthpiece for the presidents, and that's kind of what you have to keep in mind when you hear anything out of his mouth. How much of this goes on him, or does this fall more on the chancellors and presidents of the Big Ten schools who don't want to play?
Yeah, there is some, I think, probably misinformation when it comes to conferences and how decisions are made. I think that the commissioner oversees the group of, and this is for every conference, the commissioner oversees a group of presidents and chancellors. And he doesn't make, when it comes to big votes like that, he doesn't make those decisions. The presidents and chancellors vote. Now, does he have some sway? Of course. And I've always heard, like in the SEC, for instance, Greg Sankey has a huge sway on his presidents and chancellors.
Very much.
He can't make one specific decision. So it's all on those presidents and chancellors.
How do you think, just switching to on-field stuff with Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated college football writer, Georgia gets underway in a couple of weeks against Arkansas. Who the quarterback will be still remains to be seen. We thought Jamie Newman had the inside track, but he opts out. And now you're looking at either JT Daniels, DeJuan Mathis, or other, basically when it comes to the college football start of that season. How does that affect Georgia's ability to win the SEC East?
Well, I think, you know, there was a lot of, you know, Georgia, a good thing is Georgia didn't put all of its eggs in the Jamie Newman basket. And they had a backup there, as you mentioned. And, I think a lot of the predictions and projections for Georgia were made based on Jamie Newman being the quarterback, being the starting quarterback. I know there's also a lot of, misleading information on that situation too. I know a lot of people are thinking that Jamie Newman was maybe not going to win the job, and that's why he bowed out. I mean, that's not what I've heard. And so I think that Jamie Newman's departure is a significant blow. And we released our crystal ball stuff this past week, and you know, I had Georgia in the college football playoff, and it showed in my colleague Pat Forty. And part of that was Jamie Newman, you know, assuming Jamie Newman was going to be a quarterback. So a huge blow, but there's one thing Georgia still has, and that's a lot of talent around him, especially on defense. I remember compiling some numbers, recruiting numbers on Georgia probably last summer, and they have more five stars than anybody, even Alabama in the SEC. So something to keep in mind as well.
The ACC didn't give Georgia Tech any favors. A trip to Tallahassee to open up the season is not something that is an enviable thing for a coach going into his second year. But many people have talked about the changing of the culture with Jeff Collins and what has taken place at Georgia Tech. What resembles a step forward in success for them in your mind?
Yeah, it's certainly not an easy schedule. I'm trying to remember how much. Did they win two games last year? Maybe three at the most.
Three and nine. They were last year. Three and nine.
In a COVID year, and having just a minimum amount of games, and who knows? Some of these teams might end up playing just eight or nine games because of cancellations, postponement. We already seen the Virginia Tech stuff. It's hard to say that it's for wins, hard to put a win total on. I think it's more so how you look this year and are you seeing steps in the right direction?
Certainly so. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, appreciate the time. Tell Liz I said hi. You two can go to brunch now.
All right. Thanks, Will.
It's Ross Dellinger joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game by the WadeFord.com hotline. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that they win today against Florida State. I think 12.5 is a disrespectful line to put on that game. I don't care how talented Florida State is. That team's a mess, and they looked like a mess last year. Now, does the changing of one head coach totally turn that team into a competent squad? I don't know. I'm also not necessarily the biggest James Blackman fan in the world when it comes to Florida State. I'm curious to see what Georgia Tech does at the quarterback position, but I think they can. I think they can finish within two touchdowns of Florida State and maybe even win the game outright. Especially when you think about the fact that Doak Campbell is going to be at 25%, or read basically the way that their capacity was in that game against Clemson when it was played last year. Man, that was, or 2 years ago. That was. I remember watching that game and seeing the guy who was reading the book in the stands. That's still one of the greatest college football memes of all time. Willie P in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. The most flexible man in the world, Jason Longshore, Atlanta United soccer analyst, joins us next to break down Five Stripes taking on Nashville this weekend, coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com. Willie P is in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com. Willie P back here with you. Producer Marshall Parker giving a nice homage to our common allegiance to Tottenham Hotspur. Play tomorrow against Everton. Also, Joe Patrick, our update guy, all three of us. So the Tottenham boys, take that, Arsenal. Jason Longshore joins us now, our Atlanta United soccer analyst, of course, on the WadeFord.com hotline. I hate doing what I did to Jason. I had him in three different slots today, but him, the consummate professional and nice guy extraordinaire, was as accommodating as possible to all of us. So thank you so much for your flexibility, Jason. Appreciate having you, and it's great to be talking soccer again with you on a Saturday.
Yeah, no problem. I thought you guys were playing that for Alex Morgan going to Tottenham Hotspur for the FAW Women's Super League season.
Yes, absolutely. That's big. And we're seeing more of these, too, with some of our women superstars in Team USA. I think there was one more player, I think, who went on loan. Was it wasn't Tobin Heath, was it?
Yeah, there's a few, actually. Tobin Heath and Kristen Press are at Manchester United. Right. And Sam Mewis and Rose Lavelle are at Manchester City. With the NWSL, you know, not being able to play a normal season this fall and not knowing exactly what the start looks like next year, it makes sense for players to go over and play in a really strong emerging league in the Women's Super League.
Atlanta United tonight against Nashville. You'll hear it right here with Jason and Mike on the call coming up from Nashville. Of course, they'll be here calling the game from afar. Stephen Glass says he's seen encouraging signs from this group. Have you?
Yeah, I have too. I feel like they're getting close. It's this battle of trying to, I think, change the mentality of the group that needed to be changed after the MLS's back tournament, after losing Joseph Martinez, changing the way that the team is playing in terms of shape, moving to a 4-3-3 that I think suits it a little bit better without Joseph for sure. Getting them to play, you know, a little more on the front foot, be a little more aggressive from a defending standpoint, defending a little bit higher up the field. But you're trying to do all that at a time where you're not having normal training sessions because of the schedule the team is playing, and you're having a game like this one where Nashville didn't play midweek, you played midweek, you're turning around and playing 3 days later. Those games add up, and you're having to rotate the squad, and then it's harder to build some continuity. So Stephen Glass has had his work cut out for him. That's not even getting into the Pitti Martinez transfer, which took a great attacking weapon away from him. So he is working hard to build a platform for this team to be successful, and it's been a lot of hard work right now.
I don't want to belabor the point on Pitti because that's in the past and in the rear view, but since you and I haven't had a chance to talk about it, do you think he was miscast with this group?
I think he's underappreciated here. A miscast, I mean, he's a player who, to get the best out of him, you want him in a very free role. And I think we saw that against Nashville, his last great match for this team, where he was out on the left, but he was able to come inside. He was able to float. He was able to go find the game wherever he needed to go find it. You want him to play freely. You don't want him, you know, playing with constraints, and whether that's dropping deep to defend or dropping deep in the build-up play, you want his touches to come in the final third where he can go at defenders. I thought from the middle of the 2019 season through the end of his time here, he was one of the best players in Major League Soccer. He produced a ton of chances, produced opportunities for others, and he did everything you'd ask him to do. I hope that it looked back on, as we get a little bit further away from it, with some fondness, because Pitty Martinez was a pretty bold signing for Atlanta United, and I wish it had ended with more trophies, but it was still a pretty good run for him in Atlanta.
Talking with Jason Longshore, Atlanta United soccer analyst, here with you on the WaitForIt.com hotline, Atlanta and Nashville later on. This is a similar question that we've been asking about the managerial search, but now that there's a DP slot open, what is the kind of player that Atlanta United is looking for to fill that void?
That's what's so interesting about it is, you know, this is a crazy season, and I don't think Atlanta United is punting in any way on this season, but you are looking at 2021 as well, because this club's always looking ahead with its transfers. When it goes out to bring a player in, you're not just looking at the next 12 games. You know, you're looking at how they fit in 21 as well. And you're going to have the ability in 2021, potentially, depending on what happens with Ezequiel Barco, who we know will end up in Europe at some point. We don't know the timeline for that. There's been interest. There's been recent interest. Also, reports coming out this week that there will be some additions to the way the rosters are structured. Three kind of young designated player slots under the age of 22. Atlanta has historically liked using those spots in general and using young designated players because it's less of a cap hit. But now if you have three regular designated player slots and three young designated player slots to work with, that's a lot of impact you can go get ahead of the 21 season. So I think you have to be strategic with all of that in terms of your recruitment policy right now. I don't think you have to go get somebody just to go get them right this second. You've got to think strategically in building the team for 21 and beyond.
Well, the other part of this too, Jason, is do you really want to go get that guy without a permanent coach?
You know, I don't have as much of a problem with that if it's the right guy, because you're not going to have a coach come in who changes the way this team plays in a dramatic sense. And Frank DeBoer didn't do that either. Players who fit are going to fit whoever the new manager is. Players who are fast, players who are technical, players who make decisions quickly, players who can play, you know, multiple roles, not just be a rigid one position, one type of system player. Those are guys you're looking at, and that's not going to change with the new manager. If the right deal's out there, I think you have to take it, because this is a buyer's market at the moment.
Jason Longshore, Atlanta United soccer analyst. We mentioned the departure of Pitty. They've played a couple of games since then. Who has stepped up in his absence?
That's been tough, because Ezequiel Barco is the player you're looking to, and he has had moments, but also a lot of people are going to remember two missed penalties, two saved penalties is the better way to put it, because those were both excellent saves from Luis Robles. The first one, the rebound was slammed in, but there was encroachment, so it's brought back, and Robles makes an even better save on the second one. You need Barco to step up even more, but you also have to get some support for him. I think in the Fort Lauderdale, or the match in Fort Lauderdale against Miami, he needed more support from the midfield behind him. And whether that's Emerson Hyneman, whether that's Mateus Hosetu, Eric Rometty, Jeff Larenowitz, Mo Adams, he's got to get somebody centrally to play off of at times. We're starting to see the wide play benefit a little bit from that increased attention on Barco. So Jurgen Dom starting to get fit. Dom and Brooks Lennon, Dom and Franco Escobar building connections. Left side, George Bello has been excellent. I think he's really stepped up. But you need Barco to get some more help going forward to be able to create more chances.
Nashville is a team that we acquired our last win against, Jason. How is this team different than when we last saw them?
Not very yet. They've added a designated player who will be coming in, Yonder Cadiz, a Venezuelan international, coming over from Benfica in Portugal. He's been loaned out by Benfica consistently, hasn't been able to find a way through there. He'll be a great fit for them, but it's going to be a little bit of time before we see him in that gold kit. So it's pretty much the same team that we've seen on the field, but I think what they've changed is they're more comfortable in the way that they play. They're more aggressive in stepping out higher to defend. They're going to be more disruptive than we've seen.
the two matches that Atlanta United's seen Nashville, they've sat pretty deep and defended deep and tried to play on the counter. They're more likely now, and I think they'll be more likely tonight at home against a team that played in the midweek, to step up and try to be disruptive when Atlanta tries to build up the play out of the back. Atlanta can't have turnovers in their own half, and they can't give up goals in the first half. They've given up 8 of their 11 goals in the first half, and it's had this team always play in from behind. And if you're tired coming into the match, you can't fall behind early.
I got about 2 minutes left. I did want to ask this question just because I keep hearing this guy's name brought up and I can't figure out why he's not with the big club yet. What's the situation involving Eric Lopez?
This has been a crazy situation all the way around. Eric Lopez was brought in on a loan to Atlanta United 2 with a deal going forward for him to join the first team in 21. And it's been talked about at different points about him being able to play for the first team this year. Well, things have changed from a normal season. In a normal season, he wouldn't have been able to play from the twos up with the ones, except for Open Cup matches, except for CONCACAF Champions League matches, friendlies, or in case of injuries and it's an emergency hardship situation. There was some talk that there would be an opportunity to move players more freely between the second team and the first team. But the protocols don't allow that to happen in terms of COVID-19 testing. There's a lot of different protocols between the two leagues, so it's been very complicated. Also, right now, you do have a roster spot, but Darren Eales has said you are looking for a designated player, and you need to save that roster spot, that international slot, for that person potentially. Lopez wouldn't make a dramatic change. I don't think he's a starter right now with this team. He's not starting up top over Kubo Torres. He's not starting out wide over Jurgen Damm at the moment. He's not starting in place of Ezequiel Barco. He's got 16 professional games. I do want to see him get some games, if that's possible, whether that's with Atlanta United 2 or not. He needs to play some, but he's not going to step in as a starter with just 16 pro games under his belt.
My day is brighter anytime I hear your voice, my man. Hopefully we go out and get the 3 points tonight. Appreciate the time. Have a good call tonight.
Thanks.
That's Jason Longshore joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And again, I appreciate Jason's flexibility because kind of had to move some things around with a couple of different people. We'll certainly be looking forward to tonight's contest between the Five Stripes and Nashville. Dan Quinn said something earlier this week to Dukes and Bell that I found utterly interesting and fascinating. We'll talk about that coming up next as we get ready for Falcons Seahawks tomorrow. Willie P. in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com and the radio.com app.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.